Welcome to the Drive Along Podcast, where in each episode I interview a guest uniquely involved in the car culture universe. With us today is Pierce Umloff, President and CEO of Jeep Jamboree USA. Pierce, what is a Jeep Jamboree?
Hi, Ron. So Jeep Jamborees were started back in 1953, actually. And essentially, the Cliff Note version of this is it's a gathering of Jeep owners that enjoy a few days of off-roading in the backcountry, wherever they are. This is the Jeep Jamboree USA program, but the Jeep Jamboree program, as you know, was expanded into Canada at one point, and there's been many variants of this around the world. So the idea, though, it's about like-minded individuals getting together, exploring anything outside of an urban area on designated routes and kind of enjoying each other's company, but enjoying where their Jeep 4x4 can take them. What we're noticing is that these people, you know, our participants and Jeep owners, they get to go places that many other people that don't drive a Jeep get to go. So they get to explore these amazing vistas or remote locations because of the capability of their Jeep 4x4 that kind of takes them to these unique locations.
So just as a clarifying point, this is a Jeep-only program then.
Correct. This is a Jeep-only program. So you cannot show up in your Ford Bronco or your 4Runner. Mostly because they probably wouldn't make it. That's just a little dig there. But the reality is, this is about the camaraderie of Jeep owners. Something that sets Jeep owners apart, in our opinion, is their kinship with each other. You know, if you look around the country right now, down the United States and around the world, but we see it typically a lot in the United States. That's where the majority of Jeeps are sold, obviously. We see a kinship amongst people that's really unique. Most recently, there was a wonderful story that came out, not a wonderful story, I'd say that in the essence of the gathering, but there was a boy recently in West Virginia, his name was Georgie, who was diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and all he wanted to see was a Jeep parade or a bunch of Jeeps. The local Jeep club went out to try to gather people to come and just parade these Jeeps around so this boy could see it. I talked to somebody who was intimately involved in the event. They said the local police stopped counting at 8,400 Jeeps that showed up at this. That is the backbone of what Jeep owners are about. In my opinion, we see it on the trail where they're willing to give their shirt off their back for you if you need it. If they have an extra part, if they have an extra bottle of water, if they have extra food, the compassion and empathy amongst Jeep owners is something that I haven't seen in anywhere. I mean, let's take the automotive world aside. They're a wonderful group of people that just tend to have big hearts, period. They always want to do the right thing. So it's the gathering of that kinship and that camaraderie that is so special, but you do need to have a Jeep 4x4 if you want to come to these gatherings.
Just for the background for people listening that don't know part of my background, I was the president of Jeep Jamboree Canada. So I'm playing a little devil's advocate here. I remember one story, a gentleman who'd been at all the Jamborees in a particular area came up to me and he said, just like Harley drivers, once you have a Harley, you always have a Harley. Once you have a Jeep, you always have a Jeep. And the other amazing thing is vehicle owners are the only people, without exception, on the road that will wave at each other.
I tell people that I usually go between a wave and a finger once in a while, depending on who I'm communicating with. Jeep owners, it's much more of a friendly wave, you know. But the reality is, you know, again, community is something that you just, the camaraderie amongst Jeep owners and the acceptance of other Jeep owners is something I haven't seen before. Just recently, I was on the phone call with one of our platinum members down here in the United States. And he said to me, he said, Pierce, you know, he said, I would go out with my dog, Elvis. And he said, we used to frequent the Jamborees and Elvis would have his own name tag at Jamborees. But he said, I was in veteran affairs, a very tough job that I had. And he said, it got me down on my luck. And he said, it just was a tough place to be. And he said, when I got out of that, I was looking for something that would kind of pick me up. But he said, the only thing that got me through all this was my dog, Elvis, and Jeep Jamborees. I found Jeep Jamborees and it brought back kind of the humanity again of what I was looking for. And he said, and to be honest with you, I was on the other side of the phone tearing up because that to me, the purpose of what we do is so much greater than just going off road and just going through some mud puddles. It's about people getting together. It's about that human connection that so much is missed, particularly during this pandemic where people can't get together and they can't socialize amongst friends. You know, Jeep owners are still going out and doing it responsibly. I mean, the state of Utah just announced that off-roading is an approved socially distanced activity. And, you know, we put 5,000 people through the program last year. It was down from our numbers of about 7,000 because some events we had to cancel. But we put 5,000 people through the program last year with zero contact tracing. We made, obviously, adjustments to the program like drive-through registration and grab-and-go meals. But, you know, common sense didn't seem to be a fleeting emotion for most people. They're saying, wait a minute, if I'm in the woods in my own Jeep, the reality is I'm further distanced away than I am people at the grocery store, people on an airplane, et cetera. And so Jeep owners kind of came out. We still had our events we had were sold out around the United States, and people were dying to do something different than being locked in their home. And they felt we had people come to us. I remember at the Rubicon Jamboree this past year in October, we said this couple came out and said, we haven't been out of the house since April. You know, this is the first time we felt comfortable coming out in an environment where there was people, but doing it in a manner where everybody was respectful of that. So we were really grateful to see that people were still coming out. And to be honest with you, when I went to Jamborees this year, the first one I went to is May, when we kind of kicked things back off again, but did it with very different protocols in place. Mm-hmm. It was the most sense of feeling normal that I felt in a long time, because people were grabbing their meals and still parking out in the middle of a field, but sitting on the back of their Jeeps instead of, you know, next to somebody inside of a community hall. And they were more than 10 feet apart, but they're sitting in their chair, still talking to people, but doing it where they were managing and being respectful of socially, being socially distanced of other people. And people felt like it was a sense of normalcy they needed.
So basically a natural social distancing environment, really.
Yeah, very much so. And I think people were really looking forward to getting out there. We started registration this year, 31 events in the 2021 season. We sold out 21 events in the first 2 weeks. We have over 1,500 vehicles on wait lists, and we anticipate another seven events to fall or sell out in the next probably 2 to 3 weeks. Before even the first event starts, we anticipate about 27 of the events will be sold out for this season.
That is amazing. And just to loop back, you referenced numbers there, and you're saying you're down last year because of obvious reasons, but 6,000? Is an average?
Yeah, about 5,000 people we still put through the program. And the events we had to cancel were not because of lack of participation. They were sold out events, but certain states in the United States had different regulations. For instance, they have required people to have 2-week quarantines in the state when they came in, which was unrealistic that people would come into the state of Vermont, for instance, and quarantine for 2 weeks for a 2-day event. You know, so we knew that wouldn't happen. You know, the hope is that these states start to use a little bit of common sense instead of shutting out every event. We've watched businesses suffer tremendously from this in local communities that rely on the Jamboree. And the reality is, unfortunately, any group gets swept under with a very broad brush saying, well, you can't organize, you have 200 people. And you're like, but wait a minute, we have 200 people in their own vehicles in the middle of the woods, socially distanced apart. But yet we kind of get lumped in the same thing. So we're hoping that we can continue to educate some of the policymakers. And obviously, hopefully, that the numbers of COVID do start to drop with the vaccine coming out. And we can see some better policies in place to reopen businesses and get these things back on track again.
Certainly. We all hope that we're all starting to see a light. Hopefully it's the right light at the end of that tunnel. I just want to loop back, 200 people at a Jamboree. Now you've got multiple places for them. They're not like all 100 vehicles in a row or something.
No, correct. So at most of the Jamborees, like the gateway to the Cumberland's Jamboree, for instance, in Kentucky, we have 19 different trails that are offered there. So we try to max out the number of vehicles on a specific trail to 20. So the trail can flow. So you're not stop and go the whole time. It's actually so moving forward. So no, if we have an event where we have 150 Jeeps, you know, there may be 10 different trails that are offered there that you can sign up for. And the idea behind it is that you have a variety of trails. So for people who are showing up that are new to the sport, there's something that's not as challenging, but a little more scenic, a little more beginner on that level for people that they can sign up for. And then obviously, you know, people who are more advanced can sign up for something that's a little more technical that pushes the capabilities in themselves and their Jeep 4x4 when they're at the Jamboree. So we like to have a variety of trails to offer at these events.
So these trails, I'm a novice, I show up at a Jamboree, and there's the Spruce Trail and the Birch Trail and the Tree Trail.
Which one do you sign up for?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what makes the Jeep Jamboree program so unique is that we have over 600 trail guides in the field. And these trail guides are knowledgeable about the area. They've run these trails year after year. And so when you get on site, you can ask the trail guides, you know, what trail this is time for, what you're comfortable with. You know, the reality is a Jeep vehicle is capable of almost anything. We take stock vehicles, Wranglers, on the Rubicon Trail every year. But, you know, driver ability is a big component to that. You know, when you're first off, you don't want to try something that's too technical. You know, it may damage your vehicle. It may scare you away, to be honest with you. So we always like people to start on the more scenic, the more beginner levels. Get an appetite for it. Wet your palate a little bit about what you're getting into. Build some confidence up about what your Jeep can do. Because the reality is, you know, the number one comment we hear at Jamborees for first timers is, I wouldn't have believed it was possible if I didn't see the Jeep do it in front of me, you know? And so you almost have to be an eyewitness to watching the fact that you are going to conquer something great. Because if you look at the obstacle for the first time and you're a first timer, you go, absolutely no way this vehicle is going to go over this obstacle, whether it's up a hill or through a creek or through some muddy ruts. They just don't think the vehicle's that capable. And then they watch a vehicle in front of them do it, and then they do it themselves. And the reality is they're shocked not only what the vehicle's capable of, but what they're capable of at the end of the day as being a driver behind the wheel of that vehicle.
So the trails are rated then.
They are, yeah.
And they're rated by numbers as well, correct?
Yeah, we like to rate them by numbers, and I like the old ski system, the green circle, blue square, black diamond, double black diamond, right? Yeah. So the idea is that there's at least some reference points in there. If you go to the Jeep Jamboree USA website, you'll see a trail rating section, which rates the trails, so you can look at which ones are more difficult. You know, you do have the Rubicon Trail, which is rated a 10. It's not recommended for first timers. We like to have people have at least some experience before they come to that. And there's certain, at some Jamborees, there's certain equipment that's required, you know, depending on certain tire size or if they need skid plates or rock rails or certain protections on their vehicle, like differential covers. So we make sure that those are spelled out in those events like Rubicon. So the Rubicon Trail, it's rated a 10 for a reason. The first 7.5 miles of the trail takes 9 hours to navigate, typically. And I remember on the first trip a couple of years ago, we had JKs on the back differential cover. JKs had like a little lip on the back that would catch a rock. And that year we peeled 24 differential covers on the first day of the trail because they would catch on these rocks and just tear the back diff off. Or they'd open it up and it would start to, you know, leak fluid. So we made it mandatory the next year that rear glide plates were mandatory for all the vehicles that came on the trail. And guess how many we lost next year? Zero.
Zero.
So, you know, we make modifications to our policies for good reason, because we don't want people to see a damage to their vehicle, but we don't want to see people broken down the trail for no good reason. So, you know, we end up finding these weak points on vehicles pretty rapidly. You know, when we see 7,000 consumers through the program a year, we get to hear what's going on in people's minds. And then we modify the program to adjust accordingly to hopefully enhance their experience.
Fantastic. The Rubicon Trail, that was the original trail, correct? Or a variation of it? Like back in 1953, when Mark Smith started this whole idea, it was on the Rubicon, wasn't it?
Correct. I mean, this is where you could argue at some point that Jeeping as a sport started on the Rubicon Trail. Although back then it was Willys, you know, were used, I mean, after the war, but they really weren't used for sport. You know, they were used for utilitarian stuff like farming and just getting the job done. And in 1952, when Mark went in an old pickup truck with a friend, they drove into Rubicon Springs, which is now our base camp, and came back to his wife. And his wife tells the story saying, I found Shangri-La. I found the most beautiful place on earth, this place called Rubicon Springs. And the next year, as a Rotary Club project, Mark started the first Jeepers Jamboree. I think it had 53 Willys or something. And back then, the trail was an unmaintained county road, so you could drive it in Willys. But as the years went on, and winters are rough on trails like that, it became more and more rough and rough, and became this kind of notorious, world-famous trail that is pretty challenging. But that's kind of where the first Jeep Jamboree started, and that's really where Jeeping as a sport, as an organized sport, started. And now we hear 65 years later, and the sport of motorized recreation has changed so much over the last couple decades. And to be honest with you, you know, the vehicle manufacturer Jeep has really adapted well with this as well. Like, we would have people call the program years ago and say, look, I'm not coming this year. And we're like, why? What did we do? And they said, nothing. We're having children and we can't have a Jeep and kids, you know? And they were literally making this decision between, you know, having a family and their Jeep, and you'd have this huge, like, they were like ripping their heart out at the end of the day, you know, that they were getting rid of their Jeep for making a family. And then we would get a call years later that said, "We're coming back." And we said, "Well, why are you coming back?" And they said, "Well, the four-door Wrangler, we bought a four-door, and now we're able to bring our family." So literally the introduction of the four-door Wrangler, which is a primary vehicle now at Jamborees, you'll see more four-doors than you will two-doors. And because we still have almost 1,000 families show up at Jamborees, it literally changed the dialogue on who could off-road, and it expanded this industry to families that wouldn't typically come out and do this. And so, I mean, that four-door Wrangler, if you ask companies that produce product for vehicles, they're selling for the unlimited majority of the time, whether it's bumpers, winches, tires, et cetera. I mean, this vehicle solely has supported $1 billion aftermarket industry afterwards just because of the introduction of four doors. And we see that at Jamborees. It's gotten a lot of families out there. Well, thanks to Jeep for producing something that get families out there.
Certainly just eyeballing on the street, you definitely see more four-door or unlimited Wranglers than you do two-door.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and then you have the introduction of the Gladiator, and it just, again, brought a different person out there as well. You know, somebody that wanted something more for overlanding. I mean, to be honest with you, the Gladiator is a phenomenal overlanding vehicle. You know, having the space outside to put a tent on the back and a rack and store some extra things, it's a great vehicle to be overlanding with. So, yeah, a lot has changed, you know, and that's really promoted the growth of these other industries and other sporting activities.
That's amazing. And just a note on the Rubicon, having driven the Rubicon, you can't overemphasize how brutal that drive is in a good way, but it's a white knuckler. In 9 hours, that must be an expert.
Yeah. Yeah. That's 9 hours just a camp, and then you're halfway, you know? It's so funny because we have people come out all the time and say, "Well, you know, I have trails on my we have really hard trails, harder than the Rubicon." You go, "You know what? You're right. You have 50 yards that are really difficult that nobody can drive up, but you don't have 17 and a half miles of it." And people don't recognize it. We've had a gentleman out last year who runs one of our Jamborees, and he's been in rock crawling competitions and all this stuff. And he finally came out and he goes, "You're not kidding." He's like, because he was halfway through the first day. And he's like, the number one comment we get when people are out there for the first time is about halfway, about noon, they're going, "Where's camp?" And we're like, "6 more hours." And they're like, "What?" They just look defeated. And that's just, it gets harder and harder as you get to camp. So, Mark then subsequently went out, and Mark created two partnerships and bought all the private land up on the Rubicon Trail to make sure we kept it open away from Forest Service to keep the trail open. You know, he knew as a realtor, he was also a realtor. He said, I own land, they can't close me out of my own property.
Right.
You know, and so he really wanted to protect that trail. And today that trail is responsible for, I think, $25 to $30 million in the local communities every summer. So it's a big economic stimulus to these businesses that rely on people going up there. And that's one trail. You know?
Not surprising. Yeah, but it's one heck of a trail. Yeah, I remember that, breaking for lunch and going, okay, well, just down the other side and away we were there. Well, no, it's...
Yeah, it seems easy. You look at it, you go, it's just right over there.
You know? So, Pierce, let's talk about you for a minute. How did you end up being... not so much the president and CEO, but how did you get involved? What started you on this?
Well, I was a terrible student in high school. I mean, terrible. I had, you know, learning disabilities and dyslexia and you name it. But I ran a landscape company when I was in high school. I can work anybody under the table. I'm the first person to show up at the office and the last person to leave, typically. On Sunday night, I ended up at 1 a.m. I was still working, trying to get ahead of myself on a couple of projects. So I will work harder than anybody else to get where I need to go. And I had taken a year off between high school and college. I like to joke that I was second in my class, second from last. I took a year off and I started working with an automotive photojournalist. Her name was Sue Mead. And I was carrying her bags around, and we went to a Camp Jeep event in Camp Hale, Colorado in 1996. It was at that event that I met Mark Smith, who is the founder of Jeep Jamboree USA, and got involved with him and moved out to California to go to college. But I was sitting in college classes, you know, doing terribly, working budgets in my head and figuring out how we could do things differently as a company. And after 2 years of college, I just said, this is not only boring me to death, but I literally am not gaining anything. My brain's much more active. And so Mark allowed me to run a program by myself, and the program did really well. And then he kind of let the reins off. And, you know, we've taken this program now, which is 31 events, But we've also expanded it into a new series called the Jeep Adventure Academy, which we piloted 3 events last year on. And we're getting ready to announce 15 locations this year in 2021 for new Jeep owners to learn about their Jeep 4x4s. So we piloted 3 events last year. They were hugely successful. They sold out really quickly. And the feedback we got from consumers. On top of the 31 events, we're going to have 15 Jeep Adventure Academy events in 2021. So
you're still in the office at 1 in the morning.
Yeah, no kidding. So I think we have a total with our corporate events. We have a total of 50 events planned this year. It definitely keeps us busy and on the road.
That's aggressive. So. Very aggressive.
Yeah, I know. These gray hairs are starting to come in pretty thick, you know.
That's why we're on audio. I also understand you've been abroad now with your experience. Brazil comes to mind, and I think you're over in Asia at some point.
Yes, you know, as Jeep expands globally, you know, this is a brand that should be shared internationally. This is a brand and a vehicle that is not only teaching just, you know, Americans how to off-road, but as you know, from being the president of Jeep Jamboree Canada, you know, you saw that growth up there in Canada, but, you know, Jeep has made it a real pact to try to ensure this brand gets international recognition. And as people start to discover the brand overseas, it's starting to build up traction. We've definitely taken the discussion of off-roading overseas. Jeep has a big plant in Brazil that builds the Renegade. And we went down there to build a massive off-road track for them so they could not only test the vehicle down there, but start to show consumers and media what the vehicle and the brand is really capable of. And then we've launched the JL over in New Zealand. We launched the Gladiator in New Zealand to the international media, where we could showcase this vehicle out in the wilds of New Zealand, essentially. And in New Zealand, when we did that program for Gladiator, we had 27 inches of rain in about 2 weeks. It was a nightmare. And there's no other vehicle that could really tackle that Mother Nature's fury at the end of the day than a Jeep could. And it did. I mean, we did crazy things with that vehicle with 27 inches of rain. You know, we're trying to get to the next big project we were on right before this happened is we're working with our counterparts in Asia to drive to, there's 2 base camps at Everest, and we're going to try to drive to the second base camp of Everest, which you can drive to and remove garbage from it with some of our Chinese counterparts over in Shanghai. And so we were just in the process of going over there when COVID hit and we had to kind of shut that whole thing down. Right. So the hope is that we can build this brand even bigger internationally, or as big as what we have in the States, really show people where you can go with this. And there's so many places around the world that are conducive to still exploring, you know, with a motorized vehicle, and Jeep's the perfect platform to do it with.
I will agree with that. Pierce, if I owned a Jeep and I wanted to be involved in Jeep Jamboree USA, well, from what you're saying, maybe in 2022, how do I find a website?
Sure. So there's a couple of places you can go. One is our website, which is jeepjamboreeusa.com. But you can also look us up on different social media platforms like Instagram or Facebook. And we're constantly posting new content out there to kind of engage people in the conversation of where to go, what to do, how to do it. And there's actually each of our jamborees in the country in the United States has their individual Facebook group as well. So you can go to the Rubicon group and you can sign in for that. You do have to be pre-approved to go in there because we try to keep out people who are trying to promote, you know, other products and spammers out there. So we try to make sure it's really authentic. But what's nice is in some of these individual groups, like Gateway to the Cumberland's Jamboree or Moab, there's over 1,000 people in these private groups that are talking about things. So if people are going to the Moab Jeep Jamboree, what's great is they post a comment in there and say, you know, I'm coming for the first time. What would you recommend? And they'll get 20 or 30 comments from people who have been before. And they'll share with them, oh, this is on my first event. This is what I brought. This is what I did. And so it really keeps the conversation really authentic and genuine, where it's not coming from us. It's coming from either trail guides or consumers that have been in the past. So if you go to our website and you look at the individual pages, there's an opportunity to go to the individual Facebook group and you can join those as well and really be part of a really engaging conversation with people are going to give you honest feedback of what the experience is like.
And that really takes a full circle back to the experience on site, where it's such a wonderful group of people, so caring and looking out for each other. And it sounds like the social media side is sort of supporting that same attitude.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so. Well, it's nice when people can connect with other Jeep owners. Of course, we're going to tell you it's great. We're Jeep Jamboree USA. What are we going to say? Come to Jamboree. It's terrible. No, of course, we're going to say it's great. So, but when they can hear it from consumers, then it builds instant credibility that they're not being, you know, misled by any way, shape or form. They're saying, wow, if other people have went, had a good experience, I can trust that review. It's no different than trusting a TripAdvisor review online. You look what other people have said. Of course, the hotel is going to tell you they're a wonderful place, but was the experience tickets or what the hotel is telling you or the airline is telling you, whatever it is, match the consumer experience. And that's what we like to do. We believe that there's enough trust out there. We believe we do a good job and we allow our consumers to tell that story for us.
Very good. Pierce, this has been wonderful. Great to catch up. You're just a wealth of knowledge about Jeep and off-road, and just great to hear everything that's going on and how well it's going and how well it's doing and how well you're doing. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Ron. Good to see you. Talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks, Pierce.
If you have a company, product, or service that could benefit from being a part of the Drive Along podcast, please contact us at www.drivenorg.com/podcast or email us at info@drivenorg.com.